Hello, and welcome to the Varonida podcast. I'm your host, Tibbs, and together we're going to dive into the world of digital marketing, advertising, privacy, and how all of this ties to the blockchain. On this episode, I am chatting with one of our advisors, Ben Vernon. Ben is involved with a couple of blockchain projects as an investor and advisor, and also runs one of the first TV and film production company that uses the blockchain. So today I'm joined by Ben Arnon, who's one of our advisors. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you? Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here with us on the screencast and podcast for Varonida. So for people who are not familiar with your work, could you present yourself a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I am an investor in the blockchain and crypto asset space. I also advise some companies, including this one. And my background prior to sort of getting, I would say, passionate and then obsessive about the blockchain space, and particularly in early 2017, I'd been involved with blockchain since about 2012 or 13, but a little more passively. Mm-hmm. My background is in both technology and entertainment media. So early in my career, I worked in the film and music businesses, and then I consciously transitioned to the digital media space, mm-hmm. Led business development at Yahoo Music, and had a couple of other types of roles like that. And then I transitioned into the tech space. I helped I joined a social media marketing startup that was incubated by Facebook, mm-hmm. called Wildfire in 2010. I was the sixth employee, and helped build the company to over 400 people in Google in 2012. So I spent about 4 years at Google as a head of industry, leading a sales team and ad solutions, media solutions sales team there. Mm-hmm. Took a little time off in 2016 and then dove deep into the blockchain crypto assets world in 2017.
That's awesome. I don't know if a lot of our audience is going to be familiar with Wildfire, but I remember hearing that news at the time and being employee number six. Like, that must have been so exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was a great run. We built a great team. I was always in New York. We were headquartered in Silicon Valley, so mm-hmm. I would take trips out there probably every 1 to 2 months. Mm-hmm. And we really built a really strong, incredible team over there. And then, getting acquired by Google is a pretty fascinating experience. That's especially in 2012, mm-hmm. was really a prime time for Google. So it was, and technically we were acquired by the DoubleClick business unit of Google. Mm-hmm. So it was very eye-opening. Learned a lot about the digital advertising space. Learned a lot about how a massive company like Google handles acquisitions of that sort. It was really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got the first-hand experience. And so could you tell me a bit more about how you were introduced to blockchain? So,
yeah, so, in 2011 and 12, I was reading a lot about it, and it was only mildly intriguing to me at that point. It was, really, I wasn't actually familiar with the term blockchain at that point. I was familiar with Bitcoin. Right. And my understanding of it back then was that it was sort of speculative currency. And I finally bought a Bitcoin in late 2013. It actually was horrible timing. I actually bought really at the peak at that point. The next day there was the Chinese market crash.
And
from the time between I bought to like 24 hours later, I think the price had collapsed by 30 to 40%. So I thought about buying like crazy in 2014 and 15. Mm-hmm. But I had been spooked out a little bit, so I against my better judgment, I really didn't buy that much more Bitcoin at that point. What turned things around for me was, I think in late 2015 or early 2016, I discovered the concept of smart contracts in Ethereum, mm-hmm. and especially since my background is also in the music space, started to learn that there were a whole lot of companies at that point that were thinking about utilizing blockchain technology to clean up the data issue that plagues music, especially music licensing and music mm-hmm. publishing. And that became really fascinating to me. And so that's when I dove deeper into understanding that underlying blockchain technology. That was a really fascinating business application of blockchain technology beyond just speculative currency. Mm-hmm. And then you know, started meeting with people and picking people's brains about that aspect of or that sort of business application. And then around late 2016, early 2017, started investing again into Bitcoin, into Ethereum, and started to, it was around this time last year, started to learn about the ICO concept. You know, I wish I'd been paying a little more attention in 2014 and 15,
yeah.
So that I hadn't been a little bit late to the party. But I did realize early in 2017, certainly was not late to the party. And actually, I think when I talk to people, it sounds like a lot of people had a similar experience where they sort of were observing the space a few years ago, mm-hmm. and then got deeply immersed in it in late 2016-17. So yeah, it was really around that. Business application of blockchain technology for music publishing, music licensing, and, mm-hmm. and the data, digital rights management, and the data issues that plague that, that sort of opened my eyes to this wider world of what blockchain technology is all about, mm-hmm. And just fascinated me.
It's funny that you mentioned the 2013 Chinese market crash, because, like, personally, I had been watching Bitcoin, and at the time, I think it was Litecoin. And I saw those climbing up, and I had been thinking about whether I should try to get a little bit of money in there. Yeah. And after I saw it crash, that's when I actually made the jump.
Oh, that was smarter than me. I did think I thought about doubling, tripling, quadrupling mm-hmm. down when it went, you know, down to 400 and 300. And I think it bottomed out around 200, mm-hmm. but it stayed there for basically 2 years. Time after time after time, I thought about putting a lot more in, but you know, it's just one of those things. I didn't, and then I got wise to it a couple years later.
And I think, like, for people like you and me who seem to not just be in there for the money, but also for the potential of what the technology can bring,
exactly.
I think it's still not too late to join right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, we're if this were a baseball game, you know, mm-hmm. we're in, like, not even the first inning. We're basically in, like, the first batter of the first mm-hmm. inning. I mean, it's still incredibly early. And yeah, to your point, I am. What started to open up my fascination with the space, really in a much bigger way, was when I started to understand the broader business applications, mm-hmm. supply chain management, and logistics management.
Yeah.
You know, interesting applications there, and like I said, digital rights management. You know, and things like digital advertising, you know, that became much more. And the smart contract technologies, really, when I had that aha moment, when I started to read about smart contract technology mm-hmm. and in the power of that, it just sort of blew my mind.
And so, if I read this correctly online, you're involved with a company now called Color Farm.
Yeah, I am. So I over the last year, I have sort of led a dual existence, and I'm trying to find convergence around that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, you know, deep down the rabbit hole of blockchain as an investor and advising. But then at the same time, I've actually, one of the reasons I actually spend half of my time in Los Angeles, the other half of my time in New York. One of the reasons I spend much of my time out there is because I have moved back into the sort of roots of my career a little bit, and I launched a film and TV production company called mm-hmm. Color Farm Media. And my partner is a very seasoned actress and writer. Her name is Erica Alexander. She was in the movie Get Out, and many people know her from many of her TV starring appearances. And so what we've been doing is setting up projects in Hollywood, setting up film and TV projects, and all along trying to find certain convergence with blockchain. And at certain points last year, I thought about different types of utility coin concepts, and I ended up scrapping them all. Every time I would think of something, I thought to myself, this is really, I'm stretching it. This is like a stretch. This is not really a strong use case here. And so, you know, I didn't want to pursue that. I actually think that one of the issues in the ICO space right now is that too many companies that don't have a true utility for their token have just been moving forward and sort of looking at it as a money grab. And I didn't want to do that. I decided that you know, I thought that it didn't really make sense. And so we just continued to move forward. What we are doing now, though, is finding some convergence with blockchain, because we're aiming to launch a security token. We're starting to explore all the mechanics of doing that. Mm-hmm. And the security token, rather than doing a traditional capital raise, which we were going to do, we're looking at doing capital raise through a security token to, number one, provide greater liquidity to investors. And number two, what I'm really excited about is actually potentially provide fractional ownership of the underlying intellectual property assets. If you think about it, we're a multi-platform content company. So there are all these VC funds that are tokenizing. There are real estate funds that are tokenizing. Mm-hmm. And they're really just tokenizing different asset-backed securities, whether it's the asset is real estate or startup companies or whatever other asset. You know, we invest across a portfolio of assets, the assets being intellectual property and content. So I'm excited to explore that space and also find convergence between what I've been doing on the Color Farm Media content development space and here in blockchain.
I mean, that sounds really like a one-of-a-kind type of thing. Like, I don't know, I haven't heard any company doing that. I haven't heard from any of the big studios or other production companies, so... That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, we're trying to be early. We're trying to be innovative, and you know, we're starting to work with lawyers. Obviously, with the security tokens, the issue is that they're complicated, and especially with the United States SEC and other regulatory boards. There's you know, a lot of compliance issues, and so you know, we're just ramping that up now, but excited about it.
Awesome. I mean, even like personally, I know I'll have to keep my eye on it.
Yeah. Great.
So yeah, like I'm at this point, I'm really happy, that you're one of our advisors at Varanita, and, you're also investing in different blockchain related projects. So I would like to know, if you could tell me what's been the most exciting for you lately in terms of what's happening in the blockchain space, something that excites you maybe.
Yeah. You know, I think that, I think actually the whole world of security tokens actually excites me a lot. I've been spending a lot of time with some of the sort of leaders in that space. I was at the Polycon conference. I was just last night here in New York. I was at the Security Token Association first ever meetup. And, you know, I think that that excites me just because I think, at least here in the U.S., I think the SEC has made it abundantly clear that moving forward at some point in 2018, virtually all ICOs will be considered security offerings by the SEC. And so this dual token model is interesting to me, this dual sort of a security token for the fundraising aspect of what a company might be doing, coupled with a utility token when there is a real use case, like there is with many companies, especially on the protocol layer. You know, that's a very exciting that's a very exciting thing that's happening in the space. I also think it's amazing, you know, if we actually step back and we think about what's happening here, this is like the 1995, you know, moment for Web 1.0. This is like the Netscape moment. I mean, back in Web 1.0 days, you know, you had all these amazing protocols, but they were all open source, and there was no value. There was no one made any money off of them. And that's not, you know, you know, the main purpose of open source technology, but it is amazing. You know, that's things like SMTP and HTTP and you know, all those different protocol layers. And obviously, you know, there are great articles out there, like the FAT protocol seminal kind of article that was written and others. But the fact that that this technology can enable network effects and incentive mechanisms and build value for protocols that in the past, for protocols that are essentially building the infrastructure layer of what I believe is the next, you know, the next phase of the internet, you know, Web 3.0, and the next really going to be critically important in all of our lives and many aspects of business and humanity in general. You know, I think that's a really exciting thing, and sometimes we don't stop and think about that. you know, beyond that, I think, you know, in terms of like the currency aspect of all this, I'm not excited by this humongous market correction. It's definitely been steeper than I expected. And I guess that was kind of naive of me. I should have expected it to be just as steep as the climb was. But I did expect a steep correction, but not quite. We were at $850 billion in terms of market cap. I don't know what it is this morning, but last night it was below 300. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that, and I did not expect it to last this long, and it could be certainly lasting longer. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I kind of expected it to just last a few weeks and then turn back around. With all that said, I do think that it's healthy, and I think that it's to some degree I'm excited about it, because I do think that there was too much frothiness. There was too much. Again, there were companies that were just kind of doing money grabs, launching utility tokens that weren't really, there was no real utility in launching market caps or hard caps. I mean, that were, just arbitrary and really didn't need to be as high as they were. So overall, I think that from the cryptocurrency standpoint, the market correction has been challenging for many investors in the space, but in the long run, it's probably been a helpful thing long run for the space.
Yeah. I really like what you said about just taking a step back, because like you said, like Web 3.0, I think at least it's in my personal belief that similar to like the late 90s, there's going to be a bigger crash at some point, and a lot of these companies may find themselves in trouble. But that also means that for those who survive and for those who are in it for the long run, there's a huge potential.
I agree. Yeah, it's sort of a little bit of a shakeout. And quite frankly, anyone who's in this space knows, anyone who's on the Telegram chats and everything knows that there are some bad actors out there. And so, we need to shake that stuff out. The scams and the frauds. So, to some degree, this is a bit of a shakeout, and that's a positive thing for anyone who's well-intentioned and has, and has like real, powerful, impactful use cases that that make sense and that matter. Because there are some things that will come about in the future as a result of blockchain technology that truly will change the world. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to be able to get there. I talk about it as a blockchain bridge. We're not going to be able to bridge, Jeffrey Moore's book of crossing the chasm. We're not going to be able to sort of bridge from early adopter cryptocurrency sort of asset holders to the early majority and beyond to mainstream and sort of mass consumption of blockchain technology. We're not going to cross that bridge unless. Unless the masses have, positive inclinations about what's happening in this space.
Yeah, and a real impact, I suppose.
Exactly.
So at Varanida, we're focusing on a new advertising solution that helps not just the advertisers, but also the publishers and the end users. And I wanted to ask you what convinced you to join us as an advisor on this adventure.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing was, whenever I invest, I've invested in the past in tech startups as an angel investor, and any investment that I make in the crypto space, first and foremost, it comes down to the team. And I really have enjoyed conversations with key team members, and I actually really appreciated the manifesto. I thought that was something that was a bit unique and really stuck sort of a flag in the sand and said, we're passionate about this and this is why. I also recognized, from being at Google and other experiences in and around the digital advertising space that there are a lot of problems in the space between intermediaries and fake news and all these things that are happening. I mean, we see Facebook is having a very challenging time right now, and Google will as well. The new laws that are being implemented across Europe. There are a lot of challenges, and I think that blockchain technology, one of the areas that I highlighted earlier last year that where it really made sense for blockchain based solutions was in sort of the digital advertising ecosystem. Combine all those things. I thought it was really exciting project with a strong team and some other strong advisors, and it made sense to to try to help out in any way that I can.
Well, we're really excited to have you on board. What do you think would be some of the pitfalls that a company like ours should avoid, or other companies in the blockchain space?
Yeah, I think just in general, I think companies in the blockchain space should avoid, companies should avoid things like asking for, raising more money than they really need. Mm-hmm. I think that companies should really think hard about how they're building community and the incentives that they're creating, the incentive mechanisms that are created, both in terms of the community development and certainly in terms of the token economics. I think that that's the really one of the keys with respect to blockchain technology. One of the things that separates it from, to tokenizing a company. One of the things that, gives it power and strength over just doing a traditional capital raise and sort of, selling equity in the company like companies traditionally have, is this ability to utilize these network effects and incentives to build strong community. So then how do you leverage that? How do you leverage those brand ambassadors, and how do you, create more value out of that? I think that's something that companies, I think, like earlier last year, I heard companies thinking about that a lot. And then later in the year, and especially earlier this year, I stopped hearing companies talk through that conversation, that dialogue so much. And they were just completely focused on raising their funds. So I think that that's, I think that the other thing that I think is important when I talk about this blockchain bridge is bridging, the ICO or the token generating event is not the end game. It's just the start. And so I think about bridging towards like a successful company in the long run. And, really, again, thinking about how to build community over time to enhance the value of the company in the long run, and just really thinking about, I think the most important thing, if I strip it all back, is just pretend like this is not even a tokenized business, and just think about core business fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Just think about the operations of a company, the roadmap, and which milestones need to be hit, and making sure that those are being hit, and communicating effectively with contributors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Your answer is very interesting because the majority of the things that you just said boil down, can be applied not just to ICOs and blockchain companies, but just any company at large.
Exactly.
If you drop the ball and stop focusing on your community or on your customers, then your customers are going to leave. And then the fundraising or the ICO part is essentially allowing you to then get to work, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This, at the end of the day, that's what we're all doing. We're building companies. We can't ever forget that. And the tokenization element of it is a new framework. It's a new structure around which to raise the money, and a new structure around which to create those incentive mechanisms that really can help drive that community building. But at the end of the day, it's all the same fundamentals, and it's all, businesses, 90% of startups in the outside of the blockchain world fail, and 90% of the ICOs are going to fail. That's not because they're scams. That's not because they're duping anyone. It's just because it's hard to build a business. So I think the most important thing to do is to think about how the token economics and the tokenization helps sort of catapult a business into the long-term future. But then always stay focused on just those core fundamentals of building a business as we would if this was a non-tokenized business. The same way we need to as a tokenized business. So yeah, I think I think again, back to the one of the reasons why I think that the market correction has been healthy to some degree is because I do think that it's forcing ICOs and post ICO blockchain companies to think about those business fundamentals.
Yeah, and so to wrap it up, I really like what you said earlier and about the blockchain infrastructure. I think it's really interesting because nowadays, having a cloud infrastructure, for example, for a company, it's a pretty common thing. But when it started back in the days, everyone had their own. They weren't using Amazon cloud services. And I think it's at this point here in the blockchain world where we don't quite have the right infrastructure for any company to just use. So everyone has to deploy their own, right? So with that being said, I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the future of blockchain and what impact will it have around the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's huge future in blockchain. I think, I think some of the interoperability initiatives are going to be incredibly important because of what you're talking about. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not going to gain mass adoption. I don't think that it's just going to get increasingly confusing if we create an ecosystem where there are just too many choices and tons of different blockchains and who knows what to do with this one or when to use that this one or that one. So yeah. I think that interoperability and all that is going to be very important. I think another thing that's really important to the future success of blockchain in general is UX design and user interfaces. I think right now, if I were to grade on a scale of like 1 to 10, 10 being the highest for sort of the overall UX across the space, I'd give it like a 1. I mean, it really is, it's difficult. I mean, even some people I've heard who are fairly tech savvy get confused even with Coinbase, and that's probably the easiest on-ramp of anything out there. So just getting involved in the space, either as a cryptocurrency holder or leveraging blockchain in some way, is challenging. And some of that will certainly get better as people put more attention and focus on UX design, user interfaces, and also as some of these networks really start to scale more effectively and things of that sort. But in the long run, I mean, I am bullish on some of the really like humanity changing future potential applications of blockchain, like banking the unbanked and some things that could potentially take place in terms of voting. And there are some incredible things that could happen. I think we're many years away from blockchain sort of getting to that point. It's a lot of it right now is blocking and tackling, like, the scalability issues. We're not going to, if CryptoKitties continues to to basically bring down the Ethereum network, we've got a long way to go. So those issues need to be cleared up. And we need to, the whole space needs to connect more with sort of the masses, and I think good user interfaces, solid UX design will be a strong step in that direction. Overall, I'm really excited about what 2018 and 19 have to offer. Again, I think that we're going to see a lot happening in the security token space. I think that we're going to start to see this sort of dual token model of security and utility tokens. And as the regulation and the regulatory boards start to provide either more concrete guidance on where things are going or just sort of more indications that that are pretty clear, then I think that'll help speed up the acceleration of the market. Right now there's so much uncertainty that I've even heard some companies that were potentially launching ICOs in the next month or two having attorneys telling them to hold and stuff like that. Just so much uncertainty. So once the uncertainty gets cleared up a bit, then I think the space will move a lot more quickly.
All right, well, I mean, that gives us all and myself definitely a lot of food for thought. So thanks again, Ben, for being on the meeting with me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No worries. If you're listening to this as a podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, make sure to subscribe and feel free to leave us a review. Otherwise, catch us on Anchor under the username Varanida or anchor.fm/Varanida. On Anchor, you can interact with us and share your questions and thoughts. And every few weeks, we'll take your questions and respond in a Q&A. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at varanida_VAD or find us online at varanida.com.